Hiya, Tim here with a message before the podcast. Due to rights reasons, the songs have been shortened for this podcast. Every song is taken from Kings of Leon's Can We Please Have Fun. All tracks are written by Caleb, Jared, Nathan and Matthew Followell. Can We Please Have Fun was released on 10th of May 2024 on Love Tap and Capital. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Tim's listening party was a lockdown sensation.
Unfortunately, it was on Twitter, which you can't listen to.
But Absolute Radio has the solution.
Tim Burgess explores seminal albums alongside the artists who brought them to life.
Absolute Radio presents Tim's Listening Party with Tim Burgess.
Hiya, and welcome to another episode of Tim's Listening Party on Absolute Radio. I'm Tim Burgess, and I'm excited to be sitting down with another band to play back an album together. If you've missed any episodes of the show in the series, the B-52's doing Cosmic Thing, Travis doing The Man Who, ABC on The Lexicon of Love, The Libertines talking about All Quiet on the Eastern Esplanade, or Keen going through Hopes and Fears, make sure to catch up by searching for Tim's Listening Party wherever you get your podcasts. I love hearing from you, so get involved on Twitter by tweeting at Tim_Burgess and at Absolute Radio using the hashtag Tim's Listening Party. This episode I'm joined by Caleb and Jared Followell, half of Kings of Leon, a band who have headlined pretty much every music festival worldwide, playing the biggest stages across the globe. They are multi-Grammy award-winning and multi-platinum album-selling. Just play Sex on Fire wherever you are in the world and everyone will know that song. It's safe to say they're one of the biggest bands of the last two decades. Their last six albums have gone to number one in the UK, a place they hold very close to their hearts, for being the first place to embrace the four Followells for their Nashville rock. Kings of Leon are back with their ninth record, Can We Please Have Fun? And we'll be playing gigs in the UK over the summer, so make sure to catch them on tour too. Caleb, Jared,
we staying in Soho?
No, I don't know exactly. I think it's Mayfair, but I'm not sure. It's near-ish there.
Yeah.
We just kind of show up.
Holiday Inn, yeah.
It's an express.
Holiday Inn Express, one of my favourites. Yeah. So, how's it going?
It's going great.
Yeah, we've been doing press and running around trying to be salesmen.
Well, it's got to be done, hasn't it?
But we believe in the product. So,
exactly. So this is called The Listening Party. And during the pandemic, I started something on Twitter that was, you know, every hour there'd be a band, an artist, who would talk about an album in its entirety. And it would last for pretty much the length of the album, and everyone in the world tuned in and, you know, took notice, and I did 1,300.
Wow.
Which was pretty amazing. What? Yeah, well, we started off at 1 at 10 o'clock every night, and then it transpired and became like 4 a night, and then at weekends it was 10. So we just kept doing them and doing them until everything was over, and then people still wanted it after it was over, so... This is the radio version now, and this is with your new album, and I'm very excited to have you on the show.
I knew about the show. I did not realize there were that many of them. That's impressive.
I know. We had everyone from, we had McCartney, we had the John Lennon Estate, Iron Maiden.
Wow. Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney.
Okay.
Indeed.
Jesse
indeed.
McCartney.
So I'd like to know, before we start, well, we are starting, how were you leading up to this record? What was the state of play? You know, what were you thinking about?
So we had a tour in Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those tours that just felt special because we hadn't been in a long time and the crowds were amazing. And as we were kind of wrapping up the tour, we had like a meeting with our manager and stuff, and it was like, hey, the 20-year anniversary of your first album is coming up. We are thinking that we could do a tour, maybe release a couple of new songs, the greatest hits.
Yeah.
And it was so depressing to me. And I was like, no, we can't do that. Like, it's not time.
Right.
And it kind of lit a fire in us. And I was like, if people think that our past 20 years is good, wait till they see what we got next, you know?
Right.
So we went home, kind of buried ourselves away, got a bunch of songs together, and went and kind of secretly recorded stuff, secretly-ish. I mean, we did hire Kid Harpoon.
Yeah.
Nothing secretive about that. But we didn't have a record label, so we were free, agents. At the time, you know, we didn't have managers coming in listening. We kept it all in-house. And when we were finished, we played it for people. And, the reaction, you could tell that it was different from what we had been doing because it was, like, a lot more personal and a lot more hands-on. And our fingerprints are just all over it.
Yeah. What was the kind of, what were you listening to at the time? Anything interesting?
Lots of stuff, yeah. We would pass stuff around. I mean, we all kind of listened to a lot of the same music, but we'd find a song that had a part or little things like that. So we would pass around songs, and we made a playlist, and we would all kind of contribute.
Cool.
But Suicide, Dream Baby Dream, we ripped off like little things from that. And
there was a band called Ought that I really fell in love with. O-U-G-H-T.
Oh, I don't know them.
How do you say Ought?
Ought.
Anytime I'm asking the Siri or whatever, Alexa, anytime I say it, she acts like I'm an idiot. I'm like, ought, and then I have to spell it. So I don't know if I'm saying it. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly. But anyways, they had some good songs. But
A lot of The Cure.
We were all super open like just inspired.
Yeah.
So we would... You know, there would be a song that I would hear and be like, oh, yes, and it would inspire a song.
Yeah.
And then after our song was done, that song wasn't even doing it for me anymore. We were just like sucking the juice out of everything that we heard and using it and putting it into our music.
And all over, like just across the board, just tons of, like from Harry Nilsson to Chats to just like you would find something and like a little energy. From
Viagra Boys even got me going.
Of course, of course.
I'm a Cialis boy myself.
I did listen to the album. I won't go through it track by track in a sec, but there was kind of quite like a post-punk kind of like feel to it a lot. You know, the bass sound, brilliant, really, you know?
Thank you so much. Yeah, post-punk has been a huge influence, especially on me and the bass world. My favorite bass players always seem to come from that era, like Peter Hook and Paul Simonon. A few of those guys just made me into what I am right now. I'm just trying to rip them off as well as I can.
And oddly enough, when you're in the studio and there's a song that maybe one person isn't sure about, all you have to do is reference something post-punk, and then they go like, oh yeah, no, it's cool, I like that.
Steve
like
Severin.
It makes something sound cool.
Well, that's cool. Let's kick off this listening party with the first track from Can We Please Have Fun. It's Ballerina Radio. Ballerina Radio by Kings of Leon, the first song from their new album, Can We Please Have Fun? It's Tim Burgess here having a listening party with Caleb and Jared Followell on Absolute Radio, going through that very album. Can you tell me about the first track, please?
Yeah, Ballerina Radio is a song that was written at the end of our studio time in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, we were just like really synced up with the universe or whatever, and the songs were really just flowing at that point. And it's the first song that I've ever written and then went straight into my wife's bedroom and played it for her, because I'm a little precious with it self-conscious. Even my wife is still asking to hear the record, and I'm like, well, if you buy it, you'll be able to hear it, just like everyone else.
We need the sales.
But that was one, as soon as I finished the last lyric, I went in, I was like, you want to hear something? And she was like, yeah. And I like stumbled through it. And then the next day at the studio, I stumbled through it to Jared and to Kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those songs where when we did go to LA to mix the record, we were like, let's record this song. And we ended up recording that and another song on the album that we may reference later.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those songs that the story's there, is a nice story, paints a good picture, and then musically everyone just added things that took it to an even more beautiful kind of world was created with the music.
Yeah,
we always add.
Yeah.
We always, like, as a band, jump in and turn a small song, like Caleb's song, guitar, vocals, into a bigger thing and more of a production.
Yeah.
And we had never really done, like, a super broken down song that was just an instrument and the vocal, and we've always loved songs like that, like A New England by Billy Bragg, huge influence for us.
That's so funny.
Yeah, and so we had referenced that a few times, and so we kind of tried to do that a little bit with Ballerina Radio, just bass and vocal for the first little bit, which is kind of weird doing bass and vocal. It's usually guitar and vocal, but...
Did Billy Bragg do a record with Wilco?
Yes, he did.
So it's kind of, like, funny. I was thinking, you know, I mean, it's probably a term best used, or I feel it's probably most understandably used in the UK, about Americana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wondered what your take on that was, because obviously Billy is kind of like, you know, is into his Americana, the way that we think of it. And I'm saying that in a really good way, you know. I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Burrito Brothers through to Lamb Chop, you know, sort of like new country stuff and things like that. So I just wondered what your take on Americana is.
Well, Wilco, you mentioned Wilco, they have a song called Reservations that I think is also something that, you know, is... feels a little bit like that Ballerina Radio thing.
Right. Where,
you know, you got like the chimes and just kind of like the quiet moments and then like the big drum. And then it's, you know, Americana is something that when we first started, we tried to get away from, because people just assume, you know, you're a family band, you're from the South, you're this and that.
Yeah.
But I feel like the longer our career has gone, the more I appreciate that and feel, because to me now Americana means you did it yourself. It's a blue collar approach. You go in there, you walk in a room with a guitar, and you come out with a song, and that is like, that's a dying art form at this point.
And it comes from here, you know, like those people were one or two generations removed from being here, Irish and English, and they moved there and just had a mix of genres.
Ingalanda doesn't sound
good. Let's hear the second track from the new album. This is Rainbow Ball. Last track was called Rainbow Ball.
Yeah, Rainbow Ball. That was one of the songs that, as soon as it started to take shape, it felt like, all right, here we go. Now we have something to build the album off of.
Right.
I had heard a song by the band that Alexa doesn't know how to pronounce.
Yeah.
Ought.
Ought.
And they had this little hi-hat thing that I loved, and they had a lot of energy. Got to the studio that day. I happened actually to go to the restroom. Jared started, and so I'm sitting there peeing, and I hear it, and I hear the hi-hat thing in my head, and so I run out. I'm like buckling my pants. I'm like, "That's great, Nathan, get on the drums." And Nathan goes over, and it's like, "Do the," and then I had written this little, it was kind of like a little poem kind of thing. I was just playing with my kid, and it was like a construction site vibe or whatever. And I started singing that song to his bass line, and it just went, and had enough lyrics to where it's like, all right, this is a song. Went home, finished the lyrics. There was a ball in our yard, a rainbow ball that the neighbor kids had kicked over. And so I saw it, said Rainbow Ball, and then went, okay, now let's make Rainbow Ball a grand thing and not just an object. So the song, you know, the story was, there's a lot in the story. I mean, I made a football bet. I didn't win. And so I dedicate a whole verse kind of shaming the football team. So, yeah.
Do you find that inspiration like comes easier now, or have you ever really struggled, or does it just flow?
You struggle. I mean, there's definitely struggles throughout your career when you're trying to, you know, you don't know if you're trying to recreate something you've done before, or you're trying to do something completely new. But this process, there's never been a more creative time in my life.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's easy. It just depends on the song. Some come, that song in particular, that was full universe. I was completely zoned out. As a musician, you know, like how you'll just zone out and you kind of come to playing something.
Yeah.
That happened. Yeah. I was just playing something and I came to and Caleb was screaming at me. And I was like, what is happening? And he started
saying, wire his pants down.
But yeah, I did not write that bass line. So it just kind of happened.
Yeah. Came from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Came
from the rainbow.
A higher power.
Yep.
It's good when you can tune into that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Moving on to track 3 on Can We Please Have Fun? It's Nowhere to Run. Tell me about the song we just heard, Nowhere to Run.
Yeah, Nowhere to Run is... It kind of started from a funky bass line that had gotten lost along the way, and I'd completely forgotten about it. And Caleb was singing a song and doing a thing, and I started trying to write a bass line for it. And he was like, why aren't you doing the line? And I was like, what are you talking about? And he like put his phone up to my head, and there was an old voice memo of us playing. And I was like, oh, yeah. And so we
and then he had to relearn it.
I really did. It took me a second to relearn it. It's probably wrong. But we got into it and it was missing something. Like the whole song just felt to be missing something.
It was that Britpop thing that we were wanting.
Yeah, totally. We were looking for this kind of Britpop thing, a little bit like The Only One I Know.
Yes.
A little bit
of course.
Stuff like that.
I mean, apart from The Charlatans, who else were you listening to?
No, but Caleb can tell the story of us just kind of like going home a little bit bummed out about it. And then,
it was just close. It every time we heard it, it was like, man, it's close, but it's not there.
Right.
And so I kept trying to explain what I thought it was missing. And it was something in the rhythm section, and I didn't know what it was. And then, like, we kind of put it on the back burner, and we're in the studio one day, and Kid was like, I'm going to pull up Nowhere to Run. Let's work on that. And when he pulled it up, it was there. And I was like, whoa. I was like, wait, it's doing the thing.
So just where the faders were at the moment.
He maybe added something.
Right.
I think it's a shaker or something that makes the drums
swing.
Feel like it's going... Which is a very British thing. But I couldn't figure it out. And when it happened, I was like... I don't think there's much work to do. We nailed it. And I feel like it was Kid's, it was like his favorite song. He wouldn't necessarily say it, but he would always be doing this thing.
The Kid dance.
And he'd be like, yeah, you know, like at a house party.
Oh, I want to meet him.
I'd be like, this guy.
I want to meet a guy who dances like that.
Yeah. Well, that house party had to be in England. Like, that was a very British house party. And I was like, that looks like a fun party.
Let your tie down a little bit.
Yeah.
Up next is the first single from the album. It's called Mustang. Was that an early song?
It was kind of about halfway into recording, like writing-wise, it came kind of late. And I think it was originally Kid Harpoon we had been going through all the songs and starting to paint a rough picture of what the album could be. And I think he was the one who said, like, I feel like we need a rock song. There needs to be one more rock song on there. Right. Caleb came in with a guitar thing, and it came together quickly.
Yeah, but I feel like by the end of the record, it was like such a nice challenge because we were all so tuned in and we were like all linked up.
Yeah.
To where it would be like one of those things, almost arrogant in a way, like, so what do you want next? Yeah. Well, rock song? All right, I'll be back tomorrow. But it actually was working. It was one of those things where
when it's
even if it wasn't coming from him or from us, it was like one of those things where we could sense like, oh, it's just missing this one texture. And we would somehow come up with it.
Is it acoustic or electric at the beginning?
Most of the songs that were written at my house are all on acoustic.
But
stuff that we kind of come up with together, you know, it could be inspired by the sound of a bass, not just the part, but like the sounds of, you know, instrumentation and stuff like that. But a lot of the songwritery ones would be just little $150 acoustic.
On the album, it's an electric guitar through the vocal mic and just muted his amp.
Wow, okay.
Still haven't been able to recreate it.
Yeah.
We played it live and it's like, we can't do it. Like,
how do you do
everyone has to be really quiet in the room for us to be able to do it. So we just play it regular.
I like the lyric, a muscle magazine next to the toilet. It's hard to mention toilet in a song.
It is.
Hey, that was definitely a line when I said it at first. I was kind of looking around like, all right, is anyone going to object?
Yeah.
But the first time I played it and my kids heard it, they cracked up. And every kid, when you say toilet, I've seen Nathan's kids, when toilet comes on, they go like...
It's a funny word.
We grew up saying commode.
Yeah, commode didn't have the same ring.
Well, let's hear it. This is Kings Leon with Mustang on Absolute Radio. Track 4 from Can We Please Have Fun? Mustang playing on Absolute Radio. Caleb and Jared from the band join me for a listening party. The next song is Actual Daydream. It's quite sparse, beautiful chorus. I've just noted down sparkling guitar shapes after the chorus, I think. Star shapes is all I could muster up.
Yeah. It's definitely kind of a sparkly is probably a good word.
Sparkly,
kind of,
yeah.
Yeah, Actual Daydream, but... We were like all trying to be very positive in the studio and in the process. And my wife said, she was talking about something. She said, actual nightmare. And I was like, well, let's be positive. It's like, what if it was an actual daydream? And then I like wrote down actual daydream. And then when we got together and the song, and by the time the lyric was happening, it was actual daydream. And it's a song that I feel like people have heard the album. That's one that we didn't necessarily at first hear it as like a single potential or whatever. We just liked the song.
Yeah.
But everyone that listens to it goes like, what is that one? Mm-hmm. So.
The label does not think it's... We've not heard anything about it being a single or anything like that. But
right.
Well, I don't think the label's a single. So.
We're going to force that.
Do you... I mean, you said that you don't like the idea of looking back. But, I mean, do you ever look back to kind of, like, move yourself forward, you know, musically?
Yeah. With this one, especially Kid, kind of, it's hard for us. You know, we're young when we first started and musically very green and just kind of didn't know what we were doing and just running across a tightrope, not knowing if we were going to make it or continue or be allowed to continue. And so I look back at some of that stuff and I can cringe, especially at my own stuff, you know, and Kid was like, man, that stuff's great.
Yeah.
Like, all of my friends listened to that stuff. And when his friends found out that he was working with us, they would be like, are you going to get him back? Like, are you going to get some of that old stuff in there?
Yeah.
And so he kind of made us feel a little bit better about that and kind of, you know, it was like, you guys can still do that. You guys are still cool. You're, you know.
Yeah.
How did you find out about Kid Harpoon? Did you know him before? Or
our manager manages Harry.
Harry Styles, right?
We had known Harry through the years. Harry was a fan of ours, and he was in One Direction. And so I remember we all signed a guitar for him, and like it was like a thing.
He didn't ask for it, we just did it.
Always the best way.
But he was a fan of ours, and, you know, we knew that he had worked with Kid. Full disclosure, I hadn't really heard the music that much.
Right.
I'd heard, like, a couple of singles.
Yeah.
But... Kid came to our show in London And so we got to meet him.
Yeah.
And so we're like, he seems like a nice guy. We can go try a song with him.
Yeah,
see what it's like, you know, if he turns it, or, you know, tries to shove us into a pop world that is uncomfortable for us, we won't do anything else with him.
Yeah.
And like Jared said, quite the opposite. He came in and was like, I want to hear the old stuff.
Yeah.
But just, he walked in, he was one of us. Straight away, positive attitude. Nothing seemed like out of our reach.
Yeah.
It was like, what do you guys want to do? Let's go do it. And he helped us get across the line, and it was awesome. We love him. We hope we get to work with him again.
So did he sort of send demos, or did he just kind of like come in your world, or?
We mulled over it for a couple of weeks, and we're pretty self-conscious just as people. And it's like Matt, our guitar player, would be like, you cannot send him that. And I'm like, dude, it's demos. Like, it's literally just us jamming. You know, it's not like we're not saying, here's our single.
Really open them, yeah, you know.
Yeah. And so we would go back and forth on what to send him. And then after you kind of broke down that wall a little bit and sent him one thing and then a couple of things and a few things, his positivity, and he made you feel so good. It was the opposite. He didn't like make you feel embarrassed about anything. He was like on board, like, this is gonna be awesome.
By
like,
the end of it, we were sending him stuff that we probably shouldn't have.
Voice memos and
it's just, I just did the weirdest thing in the restroom. You gotta hear this, man.
Okay, let's hear Actual Daydream. That's Actual Daydream by Kings of Leon. Caleb, the sixth song on the album is called Split Screen.
Yeah, Split Screen was the final song that we recorded for the record. We recorded that in Los Angeles right at the end. It was a song that, like I say, it came right at the end. It felt like there was something, a texture or two that was missing from the record. So when we went to L.A., we recorded Ballerina Radio and Split Screen.
Yeah.
And they were written right at the end, and the story was kind of still coming together on Split Screen right until the end.
Yeah.
And it's the only song I've ever recorded where my family was in the room and I was actually looking at my kids when I was doing the vocal.
Nice.
Which was strange. Nice. But it was like this weird full circle moment.
How old?
My son was 4 and my daughter was 11.
Nice.
But like, my son was perfectly, had his hand on the glass, like looking at me, and it was kind of an emotional moment for me.
That's why you sound so angry on that song.
Get your hands off the glass!
The face of obligation, the pain is in the poison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who wrote that?
Some of these lyrics, you know, they were just kind of poetic, and they felt right. But yeah, the disdain to put the boys in.
Yes.
I mean, there's some deep. I don't want to get myself in trouble, but some of that, you know, it felt like we were kind of living in a time when, you know, a band that looks like us, nobody really cares about. You know, and so, you know, sometimes it feels like we're forcing our music on people, because, you know, if you watch the Grammys and stuff, everyone has like a thing, you know, everyone has a certain look and they dress a certain, there's like, everyone's loud and we're just kind of
nerds.
You know, we're just like dudes that love making music and we're hard workers, and a lot of times that's kind of forgettable because it's like, yeah, I want something that's going to get my attention. So the
I told you got to get into the horns and the assless chaps.
Yeah.
And we're going to be disdain, back at the Grammys.
Disdain to put the boys in is kind of like us. Like, you don't want, but the pain is in the poison. And I feel like that's the truth, is you need us, you know, because all that stuff will fade away and those flashes in the pan will go, and eventually you're going to be needing or wanting real music written from the heart, and that's what we bring.
It's cool. Here's that song we've been talking about, Split Screen. When you first came here, all those years ago, the Brits were, pretty quick to embrace you. You know, what are your memories of that time?
Oh man,
it's the first time we ever felt famous, ever, and we weren't at all.
Man, it's those early.
I mean, you
memories.
Hit the ground running pretty quick.
We first landed and went. Well, first of all, Matthew and I. I was told you could smoke everywhere. It was a different world. Like, you can smoke anywhere. So we landed, and me and Matthew were at baggage claim smoking cigarettes. And a man walked over to us, and he's like, "You guys cannot smoke here." And we're like, "Okay." That was the first thing. We immediately got in trouble. And then they shuttled us over to the Columbia.
But
I've stayed there a lot.
Yeah.
The ride to the Columbia, we heard our song on the radio for the very first time.
Wow.
And for the very second time. We heard two of our songs, or maybe it was the same song twice.
Yeah.
But on the way to the hotel, and we were looking at each other like, are we the most famous band ever? And then, yes, it was a lot of debauchery, but also, we were such a fresh, young band. And at the Columbia Hotel were bands that had better chops than us, I think, at the hotel.
They were like 25, and we were like 17.
Yeah.
So in the hotel was Interpol, My Morning Jacket, the Datsuns. Spangle, the Star Spangles.
The bar at the Columbia.
Immediately got made fun of by Carlos D's friend. He was like, "Are you guys Led Zeppelin?" And I was like, "No. Are you?"
Nathan said, "Are you a mortician?" And we were like, "Nice comeback, dude."
Jamie Woolgar took me to see you. He did press for you at that time.
Yeah.
And so that was a fun time. I caught up with him yesterday.
Press guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So he says hi.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Anyway, let's pick up with the new record. The next song on "Can We Please Have Fun" is called "Don't Stop the Bleeding."
Yeah, "Don't Stop the Bleeding" was one of the first songs that was written that kind of led to us going like, okay, let's make a record. I was out at my farm, and a melody popped in my head, and it was the entire melody. And I just went like, ba ba da 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 da. And so for about 2 days, I was sitting there going like, I know that's a TV show or a jingle or something, because the whole melody came to me like that with no guitar, no lyric. And so then I wrote the lyric, took it to the studio, and it was one of those songs that when we first played it, we were trying to make it work and it wasn't working. And I could see that Kid wasn't fazed by the fact that it wasn't working.
Yeah.
He kind of was mulling it over and going like, okay, I think less is more with this. And so we ended up breaking it right down to the story and Jared on a bass.
Yeah.
Which is a weird approach.
Yeah.
But it gave it this, like, almost felt like a prom. You know, it felt like a little shoegazy kind of thing, but it also had like a Todd Rundgren vibe.
Wow.
Like a,
wow. Now we're talking.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was like, it gave me this special feeling, and I was like, if I heard this, I love the album that we made and all the songs, but when I hear that, I'm like, it almost sounds like we made that one for us, and I'm so glad that we kept it the way that we kept it.
The idea of a prom and Todd Rundgren together just sounds amazing to me. If you were to indulge me and give me a favorite Todd
Rundgren song?
Yeah.
"I Saw the Light" is mine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely...
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oddly enough, Todd Rundgren was never invited to the prom.
Wow. That sucks.
But then he got famous.
Yeah, if we had a prom, we would invite him.
Yeah, I feel like our walkout song and our walk-off song at this point is a Todd Rundgren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're big Rundgren, Rundgren fans. Nowhere to Rundgren was actually the name of the song.
I love that. Okay, well, I don't need to say anything after that. Time for a song. This is Don't Stop the Bleeding by Kings of Leon. Don't Stop the Bleeding. It's Tim Burgess here with Caleb and Jared, one half of Kings of Leon, for a listening party. The next song is called Nothing to Do. Great bass again.
Oh, thank you.
Little post-punky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely the most on-the-nose post-punk kind of thing on the album, I feel like. It's got that kind of big Buzzcocks wall of sound guitar, punchy bass line. Bass line's a little bit Paul Simon and kind of, but less liney, more straightforward.
It's an amazing sound. Was Mark Stent with you in LA, or was he? Did he just mix it like remotely, or
At the end, Spike? Yeah, we were in LA with him.
Yeah,
yeah, he mixed the whole thing, and it's the first time we were ever in the room when he mixed.
Yeah, he's a great guy, great mixer.
Yeah, yeah, he's awesome. We've done the last few albums with him, but he just keeps. Every time we have a new album, we're trying not to do the same things.
Of course.
And so we will send it out to five different mixers, and we do blind listens.
Right.
And every time, we're trying to pick, we're trying to pick out something new. Mm-hmm. And every time he wins.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay.
And when we, working next to him was so refreshing because he has no ego.
Yeah.
So he would work his ass off, and then we would hear something and be like, what about this? He's like, yeah, all right, give me 10 minutes. Yeah. Instead of being like, no, but this is why I like this.
Yeah.
He was just like, whatever you guys want. And he actually, like he said, he's worked on our last few records, and he came to me and was like, this is your most inspired work. So
there you go, from the master.
Thanks, Spike.
And
we'll see you next record.
We said, we didn't ask you. Just mix it.
Yeah, I worked with him on the fourth Charlatan single, and then the next time I saw him, he was doing Ray of Light, I believe,
mm-hmm.
By Madonna. Well, wow. I don't need to say that, do I? But he hadn't changed at all.
No, he's great, man.
Yeah, if we could have a Ray of Light on this record, that'd be so good.
His
body, I'm sure you do.
Work is insane.
All right, this is Nothing to Do on Absolute Radio. That's Nothing to Do from the new Kings of Leon album, Can We Please Have Fun? My favourite from the album is the next track, number 9. It's M Television.
Nice.
Yeah. My notes include these lines. Guitar, very impressive, again. Mm-hmm. My notes sort of suggested that in between vocals at 0.26 seconds.
Okay, all right.
But noticed it was a recurring thing,
gotcha.
And which is just great. And a different vocal range, perhaps, on this one. Also.
Yeah, yeah. M Television was one of those songs that I was a little leery about.
Right.
It was kind of like one of those, the difference in an old photograph and a mirror image.
Yeah.
Sometimes an old idea never takes off because you've heard it before, and so you lose the thing.
Uh-huh.
Well, the chorus for this was a bit of that, something that we had played around with musically, and it never could find its home.
Right.
So M Television, I had these chords, which ended up being the verse. And we were kind of messing around, and Matt or somebody said, what if we tried the MTV thing on here? And when it came together, it not only did it work, it inspired kind of what was being said in the song. It felt like it was kind of a little more anthemic.
Mm-hmm.
So like the message was a little more anthemic, and that scared me away. I was like, oh no, am I too on the nose with some of this stuff?
Right.
But yeah, Jared loves the vocal. He kept saying, man, it's my favorite vocal, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was what made me self-conscious. I felt like, am I reaching? Like, does it sound like I'm yearning? And he was like, no. And then I think about it, it's like, I love when bands do that.
I love when
you can hear the singer just like going for it. And it's man, that guy's cool. But when it's you, it's like, oh man, it sounds bad.
Mm-hmm. I think Caleb's not afraid of having a big single. He's afraid of people thinking that we tried to have a big single. I think that that's every band's dream is having a song that you respect and you think is awesome, and it just happens to be big.
Yeah,
and that's only happened like a few times. Like Nirvana, it did not sound like they were trying to have massive songs, and they just became massive.
You also have the fear of like, that's the only song anyone's going to hear, and they're going to define you because of that one song. And really, at the end of the day, I mean, for us, we've tried to be an album band where it's like, we want you to discover the album and listen to the album.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's be honest. A hit song is a good thing to have. So.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Let's hear my favorite track on the album. This is M Television by Kings of Leon. You all still based in Nashville?
Yeah, we all live pretty close to each other.
Yeah, wow.
We don't visit one another, but we live close enough where we should visit one another.
Yeah, I love Nashville. And I mean, to me, it sounds, I mean, again, in the greatest way, like a Nashville album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of a product of us doing it there and living there and kind of not going anywhere else to do it. But it was kind of a conscious effort for sure. Caleb talked to us about, like, staying true to what we are and where we come from and not writing about things that weren't us and, you know, just kind of writing about things in his world that were real.
And also owning the fact that we live in Music City. The reason we live in Music City is because we moved there.
Yeah.
Our mom moved us there at an age when we knew music was something we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And in order to do it, we had to become songwriters.
So we
moved to Nashville to become songwriters. And here we are 20 plus years later, and this was a time in our career when I was super focused on being a songwriter again and saying, like, these songs, it's not, we've had songs in the past where you play something musically and it feels good, and it's like, it doesn't really matter what we say. You know, the song is kind of already there in the music. This was like, even when we had those moments where the music felt good, it was like, still not going to compromise. I want people, if they only see the lyrics, they read it and go like, ooh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Or if they hear it, they go like, wait, did he just say what I think he did? That's interesting, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted the craftsmanship and the years of experience that we have to come together, not in a self-indulgent, over-the-top way, but just like, we have the skill set that we can tap into. And if we all focus together and we all have this singular goal, and it's like, we are going for greatness.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to listen to the outside world. We're not going to consider what we've done in the past, what the success may be or may not be. We're going to go in there and selfishly make the album that we want to make. And during the process, we were just going like, wow, why has it taken us so long to be selfish? You know?
I like that. I made a record in Nashville once. In Midtown.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's a funny way of working. I mean, I was asked before I went, you know, what my budget was. You know, was it mid, high, or low end? You know, and I said mid, and you know, got good value for my money. People were collecting checks for half a day's work, you know, and someone did 3.5 days, and you know, wrote a check out for for that. I thought it was like a really amazing way to work, you know.
Yeah, that's why you didn't record in Hightown or Lowtown.
Exactly. So it had to be Midtown, and it had to be mid-budget. And but it's a great way of working, and I don't think that is the same anywhere else in the world.
No, and even in Nashville, it's, you know, things have changed so much with technology and stuff. But back in the day, you know, you kind of had the same studio musicians that played on everything, on all the big country records.
Yeah, yeah.
So these dudes would roll in wearing sensible shoes, comfortable shoes, like loose-fitting stuff, sit down, sheet music, and lay down the most amazing country song.
Yeah,
and then turn the page, next song. And that just used to shock me. I'm like, they're just looking at paper and nailing it. It's crazy.
I had a Scruggs and a Moore on my record, so I was happy.
You had a what?
A Scruggs.
Oh, yeah.
And a Moore.
Mm-hmm. So that's amazing.
Yeah, I was happy.
It's a musical town.
Yeah, man. Back to the record. Track 10, Hesitation Gen.
Yeah, that was a Matthew guitar lick.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember which one it was, and neither does he. The other day we were in Mexico and going through songs. And I was like, yeah, Matt, Hesitation Gen. I was like, that was your thing. He's like, no, it wasn't. I was like, I'm trying to give you some credit here. But
it's not mine.
You did inspire it. But it was one of those things where it felt fun and frantic and like just like from the word go, just like.
Yeah.
So I wanted to write a fun story. And so I like wrote a funny story about my next door neighbor and pinning a murder on him. And
do they know?
I think I've kind of told him, but I've never really said it, but his name's Chris Gove. And he lives next door to me, and he'll be flattered by this no matter how bad I talk
this
about
is worldwide
him.
This show
well he'll hear about it.
We'll send it to him.
But yeah, it was one of those songs where it was in the office and everything was just kind of happening. And when we got to the studio and recorded it, it felt really, you know, appropriate. And it felt like it was something that the album needed.
Yeah.
And I'm playing the exact same chords as Split Screen. And no one noticed. And I was like, okay, I'm just playing a fast Split Screen here.
You can't rip yourself off.
Well,
you can't get in trouble for it, at least.
No, that's true. Did I get the lyric right? Hesitation, I have nothing to say. Conversation only got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, thanks. Conversation only got in the way. That was also one of those things where I was like, it sounds familiar. I guess someone said that, or was it just one of those things where it was inspired and it happened and it came out? But I feel like that's the case a lot of times. I used to have a lot to apologize for, and sometimes I felt like if I just didn't say anything at all,
mm-hmm.
it would work itself out.
time.
Time heals all, right? So that was kind of my technique. People would just be sitting there like, oh, he's going to apologize. And I just wouldn't.
Eventually they forget about it.
Yeah. Eventually, oddly enough, eventually it's kind of like you make them crazy and they end up apologizing to you, which is kind of nice.
You know what makes them forget about it? Another bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're mad at that one.
I forget what I was mad about.
It was like four mads ago.
Fantastic. Here's track 10 from the new Kings of Leon album, Hesitation Gen. That was Hesitation Gen by Kings of Leon. The penultimate track, Ease Me On. I've written, it's a gorgeous song, a little bit of a different flavour. And the lyric struck me, when you're ready, I'll be ready, always on my mind. And I thought it sounded like a song about longing.
Yeah, Ease Me On was a song that I had kind of been holding on to for a while. And to the point where I didn't know if it would ever actually have a life.
Sure.
But it was one that I always played around the house. on the front porch after I'd been playing it one night. I started doing that Always On My Mind thing, realizing you could kind of loop it and do this hypnotic thing. And there was a little pushback in the studio of whether or not we were going to do the song, because it lends itself to go really country. And we were trying to hold it back a little bit. And then in the end, we kind of just like, look, it is what it is. Let's just record it the way that it feels like it needs to be recorded. And after we were done, we were all like, this feels like it belongs on the album.
Yeah,
it was like that 70s country, like that big kind of theatrical 70s country, not like new modern
country.
Sorry,
when I say country, I assume people have taste. But yeah, that's the country that we draw from. And don't just say 70s.
80s?
I can mess with some 80s and some 90s.
Oh, yeah.
There's some good 90s country.
Oh, I love all those genres, but this song kind of sounds like that.
It does.
Kind of like...
Yeah, it does. It is... And, you know...
Rhinestone Cowboy.
Yeah, a little Glen Campbell vibe, a little bit. You know, I love all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And one day, I'm just going to go spend a bunch of money and have a room full of, like, the best country musicians, and I'm just going to be very self-indulgent and just write songs and make them big and beautiful and then just listen to them myself.
Do you know how exotic a porch in Nashville sounds?
How exotic?
Yeah. I mean, to everybody who's listening, it'll be just like... I mean, I've sat on a porch in Nashville, and it is exotic, with dogs and sort of like...
Mosquitoes.
A chair.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't say any mosquitoes, but...
No, it's actually not that bad. No, but we have fireflies still. I don't know if they get them over here.
Wow.
But it's truly magical.
The studio that we worked in had a beautiful porch. Mm-hmm. And actually, early on, when the band... When we came over here and made a little bit of money, we went home and bought a house, and we would set our amps on our front porch because we had just toured with U2, so we heard these big sounds, and we didn't have like reverb pedals and stuff, but we had land. Mm-hmm. So we put the amps on the porch, and the song would go forever. And so that front porch vibe definitely is something that's
a gorgeous thing.
From.
And when city folk would come by on the river, we would just be sitting out there playing.
Get out of here. Get.
Just waiting for them.
So cool.
You sure do have a pretty mouth.
The 11th song from Can We Please Have Fun? Here's Ease Me On. Ease Me On, the penultimate song from Kings of Leon's Can We Please Have Fun? Which means that the listening part is nearly over. Caleb, Jared, we're at the final track. How do you decide that it's going to be the last song on the album when you're constructing
and
it?
Scene.
Yes. It's called Scene. Huge chorus. Again, it sounds like longing, maybe, perhaps. I don't know.
That's a Jared Folliwell bass line that kind of... inspired everything. He started playing that line. We were in the cottage adjacent to the studio that we would later work in, but we didn't know that we were going to work in that studio.
Yeah.
We were just writing songs. And I went to the microphone and said, there's a home up on the hillside up above this cloud of dirt, and was talking about the studio that later on would be the studio. But everything just kind of came out. It wasn't like, hey, I need to write this down. It was like just listening to him play, and I was like, it felt grungy.
Great bass line,
It was gray outside, low-hanging clouds. Like, everything, it just felt like, in a weird way, it felt like the most youthful song on the album.
Yeah.
Because it felt like we were just like punks, you know, like we didn't care.
But yeah, it's dark, it's dirty, it's definitely got a little bit of a grunge thing, but... Also, a little bit of this band from Oklahoma that we are into called Broncho, and they're just like dirty, good rock. And then as far as it being last, man, sequencing the albums is so hard. It's always hard. And it could have been last or first or in the middle. And so many songs can end an album, but it just felt like it had a good finality to it. You know, just the end grows and swells, and then it just breaks back down to nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt right. And it's last thing about Front Porches, when we first walked into the studio, there was some wind chimes on the front porch.
Yeah, well, we loved the way it sounded.
Yeah. And so we bookended the album. There's wind chimes at the beginning of Ballerina and wind chimes at the end of Scene. And they're actually recorded from like a little voice memo on our phone of those wind chimes.
I think that's why it ended up being the last song. Mm-hmm. Because in the song, I reference wind chimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have wind chimes at the front of the album. So it's like, my wife actually said, why don't you have wind chimes at the end?
Yeah.
You start with
it.
You think about it.
Yeah.
Another fun fact.
Stop with the ideas. So I went to the guys. I was like, I have the best idea.
I tried to buy those wind chimes, and they said no.
Really?
Yeah, the guy said, you know, I think I want to keep. And it's because if I had not asked, if I had just, like, gotten somebody else to ask, he would have been like, yeah, sure. But I feel like he was like, ooh, those might be valuable.
He might hear this.
Yeah. Well, I'm
didn't use those wind chimes as some from our house.
Well, thank you so much. This is the album. And I just want to, one last question is, will you still be having KOL in gaffer tape on the drums?
Nathan did that at the beginning of our career, and he won't stop. We can afford an actual
drum head.
A kick head.
Yeah, because most people, like, they can't wait, you know, to have someone, like, do a, you know, beautiful motif on, you know. I mean, I'm not saying it's not beautiful.
It's not beautiful.
It's classic.
No, they'll always be there.
Yeah,
it's always going to be there.
At this point, we're kind of known for it, and kids.
I think it's important to know.
There's actually a country musician who's a fan of ours, and our music has influenced him, and now his drums have
his initials.
A ZB out of the tape.
Well, the cat's out of the bag now. Yeah. It could
I
be.
Love that.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Let's conclude this listening party with the final track on Can We Please Have Fun? It's Kings of Leon with Scene. Scene by Kings of Leon, concluding the listening party on Absolute Radio. Thank you to Caleb and Jared Followell for taking me through their new album, Can We Please Have Fun? As you know, every listening party, I like to recommend a few records that I've been listening to this past week. So I'm going to recommend SZA and the track Kill Bill from SOS. The chorus is so catchy. I only heard it through a friend's daughter and I ended up buying her the record and I did have a quick listen. And this track was fantastic. And also, you know, huge props because on the last track, track 23, features ODB, which, considering he's been dead since 2004, well, that's no mean feat, so respect. Keeping with this kind of, like, slow jams, I'm going to go with Solange, Stay Flow, from the album When I Get Home. Next up, one of my favourite bands, Roxy Music. Been listening to Avalon quite a lot this week. It's kind of a smoother version of Roxy Music. And the track that I'm going to choose is The Space Between. Next up is Men I Trust, and the song's called Show Me How from 2018. Men I Trust are a trio from Canada who make dream pop, and that seems to resonate pretty big these days. Replay any past episodes of my listening party by searching and following Tim's Listening Party wherever you get your podcasts. There you'll be able to catch up on every episode of the series, The Libertines, ABC, Travis, B-52s, Keen, and loads more from the past year. Every song in this episode of my listening party was taken from Kings of Leon's Can We Please Have Fun? All tracks are written by Kings of Leon. The album was released on Love Tap and Capital in May 2024. See you next time.
Absolute Radio, telling the story behind another iconic album with Tim Burgess.
Get involved using the hashtag Tim's Twitter Listening Party.